Well, hello there. I'm Chris Angel, and my pronouns are they, them. Welcome to Allyship as a Verb, a podcast for people practicing allyship for the LGBTQ+ community and beyond.
Hi, I'm MJ Jupitus, and my pronouns are they, them.
MJ is an excellent human and friend I met through Instagram not that long ago, actually. This was another one of those conversations that I had to cut so much out because of time limitations. Basically, I know that listening to a podcast for an hour is already hard for some folks, and I'm not trying to lose listeners if I go over that. So while I imagine there would be some folks who would love it, I imagine many more wouldn't. So that said, yeah, had to cut a lot of stuff out. But MJ is a movement specialist based out of Arizona, and yes, we will find out what the hell a movement specialist is, but two quick shout-outs. I want to say thank you, Allie! Allie has become a monthly supporter. I appreciate you, friend. And I'd also like to say shout-out to Teresa of Reimagine in Medford, Massachusetts. All right, here are three self-reflection questions to think about during the episode. Be sure to stick around after the conversation for three more. Number one, do I think there are good and bad foods? Number two, have I ever punished my body for existing? Number three, how do I define health? And now, the conversation, and a content warning for disordered eating. You're a queer, non-binary, and neurodivergent movement specialist. What do those intersections mean to you?
I guess they just mean me to me. I'm queer in my sexuality, I'm non-binary in my gender, I'm neurodivergent in my brain, and I'm a movement specialist in my participation of capitalism. So I don't know what I would be like without all of them at the same time. I didn't always know I was non-binary. I didn't always know I was neurodivergent. But now that I do have that language and understanding and education around those things, they have always been part of me, always been there and encompassed who I am.
It makes a huge difference to know that about yourself, like all of those things.
Yeah.
On March 28th, you turned 30. You wrote a post on Instagram saying, "Woke up happy to be here, happy to be soft, and even happier that that is true. Here's to this next decade." And then the ta-da emoji, although I don't think people know it as the ta-da emoji, but like it's like, I don't know, the celebration one. You discuss softness a lot on your Instagram page. Can you share more about what you mean by that? Because I feel like I've experienced you using it in at least two different ways.
I think one day I was just thinking about my body, about my attitude to myself and how much it's changed over the years, and realized there's this big push to be kind to ourselves, to work on being kinder to ourselves, and that we deserve kindness. And that's absolutely true. But then I was thinking about what type of kindness. I think there's a lot of variety in how you can be kind. And then I think I just realized that the kind of kindness that I want for myself is more softness, and this approach of I am physically soft, and allowing myself to be physically soft is like a mental softness, a gentleness with myself as well. And then I just kind of started thinking about how if we focused on softness as a stepping stone to kindness. Again, I think our previous perceptions of experiences can color current experiences of them. So I think a lot of people find it hard to be kind to themselves because they've never been kind to themselves. But have you tried being soft with yourself? And in being soft and gentle, that's a form of kindness, and then you can build that into other kindnesses. and just how we're so, we, to me, being the queer, non-binary and trans community, we experience so much hardness, both externally and internally, that then the idea of flipping that and being soft just was really appealing. I just found myself saying things were really hard, again and again and again. And then I was like, well, then let's be soft. If everything is hard, let's do the opposite.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's like one binary I can get behind.
Soft or hard.
Yeah. And the answer will vary depending on the context.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's where I will leave that little number. But I'm still waking up. I'm feeling feisty, spicy. I don't even know. Things are happening. All right. The other kind of softness is related to body type. I've noticed that you also proudly proclaim to have a soft body. What does that mean to you?
So a lot of my experience growing up was around exercise and food restriction and making my body, kind of having this approach of no pain, no gain, and your body's a machine, hard muscles and toned physique, being really hard and rough with myself, with my own body. And so after top surgery.
Are you having surgery? Indulging curiosity? A common question for trans and non-binary people longing to be free. Remember, dear friends, it's not a casual ask. Respect and understanding, let's have some class. Don't be an ass, this gentle reminder here for you. We deserve privacy, and so do you. Legal and medical questions, let's not pursue. But trans, non-binary, and cis folk too. No need to ask, don't be an ass. Our validity as humans, as vibrant as can be, are not determined by anything medically. Questions should be careful and kind. Respect and empathy, let's keep that in mind. If you have a question, make it about support. That's the way to be a great sport. No need to ask, don't be an ass. 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 No need to ask. This PSA was brought to you by the people who let curiosity get the best of them and ask trans and non-binary people invasive questions. Although my dear friend MJ is willing to provide this information, I wouldn't want to ask about it, even as a non-binary person myself. And if we are going to be a great sport, then you can ask, do you have a ride to and from surgery? Do you have enough people coming in to check in on you? Would you like me to cook up some meals you can reheat? And such other offers of support. Also, you can congratulate people. And now back to our regular programming.
Because turns out, just didn't want tits. Surprise, surprise, that was it. Post-op surgery, I stopped engaging in those behaviors as much because I didn't have the dysphoria that was driving them. Also an ADHD link, I didn't need the self-regulation that, again, I was using movement to punish my body for existing and as a form of self-regulation without knowing either of those things to be true. But that's what was happening. So treating myself better and my brain better with my knowledge of ADHD and making accommodations for myself that I need, having top surgery, gender-affirming care, I didn't participate in those really destructive behaviors anymore. And as a result, my body got softer. And I love that. It is an outward expression of how far I've come, if you like the language, how much I've healed. And it's just a fact. I think a lot of people could view that as a negative experience, the whole you've let yourself go kind of thing. And I'm like, this is me showing up for myself. This is me coming through for myself. And to have that be such an outward thing. It's my body. People perceive it. Don't always wish they would, but they do. It's an outward expression of me to be happy about that and to have that as a permanent experience of myself. Is I never thought I'd have either of those things.
Before we go too away from the birthday post, I wanted to ask, so specific to the post and what you wrote for the caption, I feel like I understand what you're saying in the post, but I don't want to create a story that isn't there. So can you share what's underneath what you said specifically in the caption?
Yeah, I unfortunately think a lot of folks will be able to identify this within our community. I didn't think I'd be here. I didn't think I'd make it to 30. This is great. I truly never envisioned my life beyond my 20s. And so to be 30, to be in an entirely new decade, and to be in this decade in the best mental and safest physical place, referring to my body, not my actual location. Yeah. I'm in Arizona. That's very debatable on safety.
Yeah.
But in my body, in my mind, in myself, to have made it to 30 and to be thriving, it's phenomenal. And some days I'm a little lost. I'm a little like, I don't know what I'm doing because I truly didn't think I'd make it. Potentially quite cheesy, but we deserve a bit of cheese. Every day's a gift, you know what I mean? Under the crushing experience of capitalism, but in the queer bubbles I've got, still on the positive.
I thought that's what you were saying. The way you described it was interesting because it's one of those things that when you're in community, you can kind of read between the lines.
Absolutely.
But yeah. So I appreciate you sharing more about that. Not that you have to pick one, but I know sometimes people will say it's like flirty or dirty 30. Are you? So would it just be soft 30? Soft? I don't know. What?
Yeah. Soft all the way. The 30s are going to be the softest decade of my life. That's what I hope for them. I hope it's just full of gentle softness around me, for me. 100%. Yeah. Not that flirty, not that dirty. Soft and gentle.
The softness has reminded me of when I was first taking on the identity of lesbian, which was by way of peer pressure. A lot of people called me a butch lesbian. And I also remember experiencing a lot of people calling me like a soft butch, but it felt like in a way that, and you're nodding your head, it felt like in a way that felt diminishing or emasculating, which was weird, even though maybe it did better describe my experience at that particular time because it was the best language I had. But like, no one ever called me like a soft tomboy or anything, you know. It was only like particular to the lesbian community. And then like, I don't know, then I learned about the term stone butch, and you know, that's a whole other like journey there. I've found that it's taken me transitioning to come back to that softness, because before, even though it wasn't my goal to be masculine because I didn't quite know what was going on, and people would still probably try to describe me as either transmasculine or masculine, it felt weird because, like, anytime someone picked up on my femininity, it felt like a target and it hurt. But then also, if someone tried to, like, I don't know, give me some sort of scale of how butch I was or whatever, like, that also didn't feel good. Yeah, it wasn't until I could, especially, like, more specifically, medically transition and really lean into sensory experiences and, like, how I want to show up in the world, that it became easier to embrace things like softness and femininity. I don't know why it took getting there. I guess other than, like, it just felt like people kept comparing me to things I didn't need to be compared by. I also remember when I was a quote-unquote butch person dating another butch lesbian, then it was like, oh, well, who's the butcher one?
Just a binary scale, isn't it?
And again, trying to emasculate me, which, I don't know, it's language is tricky here, but, like, that's how it felt. It's like, okay, but you're not as butch as they are. And it's like, who cares? Are we supposed to, like, battle it out for, like, biggest butch? I don't know. So, like, it just felt weird. And I'm curious to know, especially since you nodded earlier, have you had any experience, like, with this? Did any of that resonate with you?
Oh, yeah. I think one of the things I've grown to appreciate so much about our friendship, Chris Angel, is how similar our experiences are. Like, as soon as you said soft butch, and I know I, like, nodded and my eyes flared because I was called that so much, but never asked if that's what I wanted. I was just told that's what I was. And I was like,
yeah,
I don't like that. You know, society is like, this is the box you fit into, though, so please stay in it. And I was like, I don't want this box.
No, thank you.
Yeah, complete. Yeah, exactly, right? Just very similar experience. And this is one of my biggest frustrations with gender affirming care, that it is still viewed as so binary, kind of even within our own community. The amount of times I've been referred to as trans mask or tagged in posts for trans men, or I've been emailed about trans men specific things. And it's just like, that's not me. Thrilled for the people it is, but it's not me. Removing the anatomy I had on my chest was not an attempt to masculinize myself. It was to take away the most external, feminizing, identifying thing about my body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more defeminizing than increasing masculine. And I don't know why that's so hard to grasp, but people assume there's just the assumptions and the experience of, if you've got short hair, if you're not wearing very outwardly feminine clothing, again, this is the box that you're in. And it's just not, it's not the case. It's not my experience. It's not how I see myself. And yeah, absolutely the same lesbian experience I had. Soft butch, masculine, the guy in the relationship, all of that gross stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Every time. Yeah. In every one.
Yeah. I don't want to, like, say that the lesbian community, number one, hasn't come a long way, and that number two, like, that it's easy for us to generalize for everyone that, you know, that's, like, how it is no matter what. It's just, like, it did feel, especially back then, a lot like, I don't know, one of those, like, Russian dolls or something, where it's just like, you can't just claim one title. Like, you just have to go deeper, because then it's like, well, are you a soft butch? And it's like, I don't know, ultra soft butch, or like, are we toilet paper? Like, are we, like, like, I don't, what flavor of butch are you? None of them. But, like, it, you know, it took me longer to try to articulate. Yeah, it wasn't that I was trying to become more masculine. I was just trying to, like, become more what I would describe as, like, more androgynous, and especially remove things that, parts of my body, you know, that caused me awful sensory experiences. It's a lot easier for me to say that now, but it took me figuring out I'm neuroqueer to be able to say that. So before I would say, yeah, I want to be a little bit more masculine, and all, because that was as much as I had. That was, like, the best I could describe my experience. But now that I understand everything's coming through the lens of autism first for me, that changes things immensely, because yeah, now I can just say, no, they're sensory experiences. That's what motivates my decisions, especially with my gender and anything related to that. But I'm more of, like, I haven't really said this, and I don't think I've even shared it on the podcast yet, but, like, my experience with my gender in particular would probably best be described as agender. I just say non-binary though, because I don't want to have to get into it with everyone else, or like, not everyone's going to understand that I feel more like a gender blob or galaxy or something, you know, like just because I also don't want it to be like, I'll just quickly say there's a lot of tools out there to help describe one's gender, sexuality, etc. And one of the more popular ones I feel is the genderbread person. And then there's another version of that that's with the unicorn. I don't like using that version unless it's going to be for kids or people working with kids, because I feel like that just is kind of cuter for them. However, I tend to not use it with adults because I don't want to be compared to like mythical creatures that don't exist or something.
Right.
Like, it feels like a weird othering that like hurts us more than anything else. So yeah, I'm not going to go around telling everyone I feel like a gender blob or something, like, I, because not everyone's going to understand that.
When I was growing up, and I get misgendered as a boy a lot, I had short hair, no interest in wearing, again, what we would perceive as girls' clothes. I've got broad shoulders. I'm built, again, one would say fairly masculine or androgynous. And it always upset me. And then I started, like, I got my ears pierced and I tried to wear eyeliner. I tried to present more femininely outward to stop it happening, and it didn't. Also, that challenged my acceptance of my transness, because I know so many people that would love when they got misgendered growing up, that loved that opportunity to be perceived as not what was pushed upon them.
Yeah.
And the fact I hated it. I was like, see, I can't be trans, because like that brought me no joy, but because it highlighted one or the other, It was Sarah or Miss, and I'm neither. So it makes sense that I hate both. And again, that's not going to be everyone's experience. Some non-binary people might love one or the other. Again, agreed upon gendered language is absolutely fine within a non-binary relationship. I'm my wife's wife. I'm not her spouse. I'm her wife. That is consensual gendered language. Between us, it's how she introduces me, but I'm not my parents' daughter. I'm their child. And that's okay. And it's okay to have those kind of conflictings. Well, this is okay here, but not okay here, as long as it's consensually used and agreed upon and respected.
For people whose minds just like hurt right now, how would you describe the differences there for yourself? Like, what makes wife feel okay that like daughter wouldn't, for example? I mean, if you feel like you can.
For me and my wife, there's a fairly solid reason, which is, for us, this is not the case for everyone, would never put this experience on everyone else. But for us, if she used partner or spouse or something considered more neutral in language, it feels like it de-queers the relationship. Because then it feels like hiding, to us, it feels like hiding the queerness of our relationship, Which we have no interest in doing. And thankfully, we're in a place where we don't have to. But for me, daughter has, I don't have a queer relationship with my parents, I guess, in that same way that I do with my wife. So wife, being my wife's wife, feels more queer to me than being her partner or spouse, but being my parent's daughter is just wrong for me, but being their child is absolutely correct.
I feel like the way I relate to what you just shared is that I still have F on everything. Mm. Number one, in terms of things like healthcare, unfortunately, gender matters, or sex, really. And so if I were to say I were a man, that wouldn't be accurate, and not, you know, a lot of places or providers affirm non-binary identities. And I mean, we can even also go off on a whole tangent about intersex people and like their experiences with the medical system. But like, I would be denied care that I need sometimes. Like, So I don't want to have trouble trying to access, let's say, like a pap smear if I need it, because they're like, oh, well, you're a man. But again, I wouldn't ever put male on anything because it's a lie, just like F is. However, Ideally, I would put X, given the limited system we have right now. But there are not enough places that recognize X, and it literally puts a target on me. So
huge.
I've been really, really struggling only more recently with it and deciding if I want to change that or not. And it's been weighing heavily on me. And so at the end of the day, I have to decide what's best for me. However, I do like that there's F on there for two reasons. Number one, it queers me because then we have to halt and have a conversation. And number two, even if I'm potentially in an unsafe situation, I could shrug and say, oh, it's a clerical error. I keep meaning to get it changed, but I'm lazy. You know, like if I had to hide and like have someone assume I was a man and not correct them. But then there's also times I want to be able to pull it out and use the safety of having F on there for like different things, like being allowed in certain spaces or something. And like, I don't know if I had to emergency go to a bathroom or whatever, but I also don't want to use that to like hurt our community in any way. So it's like, I have a very complicated relationship with it. And I wish we didn't have sex or gender on anything, because really the only people who need to know are ourselves, maybe any partners that we might be intimate with, and then medical providers as necessary. No one else needs to know. And I feel like it's this archaic system that's on all of these important documents that was under the guise of security before, but no longer serves us. Now I think it's the opposite. So, I mean, that's my hot take. Like, let's just get rid of it. However, I know maybe there's some people out there that that's like something that really affirms them, but like, it comes back to the whole conflating sex and gender thing for me. Also, like, is it affirming because it now says something that's more aligned for you? Or, you know, because of what it used to say if someone changed their documents? Or, you know, is it something that you really do need somewhere for it to say that, like on an official thing? If at best, then maybe it's like give people the option to opt out, because I would like to unsubscribe. Thank you.
We'll be right back. Thanks for listening. And now back to the conversation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I kind of get in a similar way. My legal name, I'm not going to do a name change. I'm an expat. I say expat because I feel like that is the white experience of immigration. And I do think it's fairly important to distinguish the privilege that comes with being a white immigrant. And so I use expat. It'll be way fussier for me to do a name change for all my British documents and all the immigration paperwork and everything. So I'm going to keep my legal name what it is, but as such, it's on every document I have. I had a wonderful experience once going into a store where they required ID, and the person at the desk looked at my ID, looked up at me, and went, "Is this the name you like to use?" And I went, "No, it's not." And they were like, "Whatever name you want." Like, it was just, that was really affirming. We got a lot of information on a lot of documents that can be really challenging for the queer experience.
TM trademark. Yeah. Because there's only one.
Right.
You know, at the top, we talked about you being a movement specialist, just sort of threw it in really quick there. Following your account was the first time I'd ever heard that title in my life. I was like, what does that mean? Do you just not like the term personal trainer, or like what's going on there, you know, because sometimes we'll like come up with new words. So what the hell is a movement specialist? And I say that with all of the love and respect and kindness and softness.
I 100% know that and feel it. You kind of hit the nail on the head. In my experience and in the experience I have in this industry, I unfortunately think personal training can do way more harm than good. I think it is more based for fitness arenas. And not everyone's movement experience is fitness-based. Then number two, I can't call myself a physical therapist because you need a certain degree and qualification for that. And I'm not going to get in more debt for that qualification. But the majority of work I do is more in line with physical therapy. It's a lot more pain management-based. So I just found myself stuck in this space of, I guess on paper, what I'm doing is personal training, but it's also way more akin to physical therapy, but I can't use that term. The other term feels tainted to me because, again, I don't necessarily have an interest in fitness and exercise. I have more of an interest in movement and the body and the brain. It went through a lot of different variations of like body and movement specialist, body and health specialist. I've really veered away from using health as a term and wellness. I think there's a lot of problematic stuff over there.
Oh, well, they're loaded.
Not everyone can be healthy by experience of their chronic conditions and the pursuit that
they're loaded. They're crunchy. They're tainted.
Sorry. Yeah. Me trying to calm down, but yeah, no, fuck them. I think they're really loaded. yeah, I think it's really loaded. I think it's the pursuit of health is just the new veering into diet culture. It's just same shit, different language, right?
Yeah.
So I try and really veer away from that. So I ultimately realized that my focus is movement, and that's what my education has been in for the last, 7-8 years now. So I specialize in movement. Therefore, I'm a movement specialist. I mean, even my degree, my undergrad and master's is in theater, but my master's was in directing, but I specifically directed physical theater and physical movement-based performance. So even though my degree kind of has nothing to do with the qualifications you'd get in personal training or physical therapy, I have always been pulled towards exploring movement and directing people in how to move and ways to move. Back then for performance, and nowadays for their own empowerment and pain reduction and gender experience.
What's cool about your account is that you offer some examples of movements, like if someone has tightness in their neck or things like that. And you also have photos of you being a possibility model for other people who may share your identities, but also for normalizing softness. And I mean, again, because capitalism, you and I've talked about as entrepreneurs or whatever, that, you know, like, well, what the hell do we put on social when we're supposed to be like supposedly selling our services and stuff, but it feels gross, but we also have to like pay rent and shit. So like, I love what you post, though, because we've had a conversation about this before. Initially, when people started posting, especially like top surgery scars and stuff, I really only saw certain body types doing that. And then it felt like it was promoting thinness or, I don't know, certain kinds of like, I don't know, muscle physique or whatever, you know, and I really struggled with that. And also, because of capitalism, this whole thing of like, quote unquote, professionalism. And I had this original idea that like, okay, if we queered professionalism, what would that mean? And eventually I just came to the conclusion that means we just like get the fuck rid of it, because professionalism is just like another tool or arm of capitalism, and or capitalism, however I want to say it. I don't like you saying it like that.
I'm going to say it like that always
now. Yeah. Yeah, it's just really interesting, but I appreciate what you do. And I'm just to take us on a silly question that is not leaving my brain. Thanks, ADHD. Have you thought about doing a post of movement for doom scrolling? So like for when we're just like stuck with our head down.
I've considered doing posts for doom scrolling and for hyperfixations, like small movements you can do whilst you're hyperfixating on something, because so many hyperfixations kind of happen in front of you, like video game, phone-based stuff, research on the computer, art, crafting, gardening. It's just usually a hand-based task happening in front of you. So yeah, I keep wanting to do posts on movements you can do whilst hyperfixating to reduce the pain you feel when you come out of the focus and you're like, oh, okay, I haven't moved for 5 hours. Or like you said, doom scrolling. I get in my way every time with those more niche posts. I'm like, they're needed. I know it's good information. Do it. And then I don't. And I keep not. But I just get in my own way of like, oh, it's really these posts that, again, that social media trap of capitalism. Like these ones do better. And people seem to want more of this, and you get really stuck in battling those algorithms, which I'm trying really hard to let go and just make the posts that I feel I enjoy making and that I would want to see. That's what the posts of my body, sorry, it feels weird to say, it's what they are, just feels weird to say it that way, but the posts of my body are for, like you said, for that representation. I have had so many people message me to be like, I have a better idea of what my top surgery is going to look like because our bodies are similar. And that means so much to me because I had no idea before that. And that's all I wanted. I had no idea what my top surgery would look like because I didn't see bodies like mine. And also the importance of that your body will change. Again, if like me, you were experiencing any degree of disordered eating pre-top surgery, your body will probably suffer in post-top surgery if those practices significantly reduce because the cause of them was rooted in dysphoria, which is reduced because of your top surgery, right? Which again, I think is why I go hard on softness because again, I just don't think it's talked about enough in the gender affirming care experience of how your body changes beyond the, for those who have access to it and want it, the surgical interventions kind of thing. Most of what I do is what I wish I had. I wish I had seen more bodies like mine. I'd probably understand myself before my mid-20s. I wish more movement information was more centered in building understanding with your body, trying stuff out, rather than changing it inherently. I wish stuff was more accessible, again, in the kinds of movements. I see so many videos that like, try this beginner routine for tight hips. And I'm like, that's not a beginner routine. Jumping about, doing a splits against the wall, like all these things. I'm like, that's not beginner. That's like professional. What are you doing? And so that's what my movement posts, I always try and have this degree of offering options, offering adjustments, highlighting the different positions it can be done in. Because I think if we make things accessible for everyone, it's forever, right? I think accessibility should be at the forefront of most social change when trying to battle capitalism. You deserve the opportunities to explore movement and how to move your body without feeling like you're being complicated. Like I work with so many neurodivergent, like I'd say if it's not 100%, it's definitely like the high 90s of my clientele are queer and neurodivergent. That's who I seek to work with, queer neurodivergent people. And it is so important to me to work with people on their sensory issues, on their introspection, on their proprioception. A workout can be an incredibly overstimulating activity. It also can be really understimulating, depending on the sensory seekingness of the individual. I wish so many more people would make sessions, classes, personal training, whatever you're doing in the movement world, consider how uncomfortable you're potentially making your neurodivergent clients. If you're not having these conversations, if you're not being like, hey, what do you need right now? Like, I always make sure I ask my clients what their sensory needs are. I have some that hate sweating. And they were like, I know this is really silly to say, like, how could I possibly like do workouts without sweating? I was like, really possibly, really easily. The only sweat you'll experience is from like the heat of the desert in any of our sessions. You're not going to sweat from exertion at all. And they're all like, but then I won't be making any progress. I was like, you absolutely will. You're going to make the progress you can make. We will see if it helps with pain. I try not to talk in absolutes. So to be like, you will reduce pain. We're going to see because your body's going to tell me what works for it. And you can absolutely do that in ways that don't sensorily. I hate the pushing. I hate the pushing through. We have to push through so fucking much.
No pain, no gain.
Fuck Criss Angel. I will come through this screen. Oh my God. Like I hate it so much. And under capitalism, we push through everything. How much discomfort we had to push through growing up queer, how much discomfort we have to push through as neurodivergent people participating in a very ableist capitalist society. The time you take with your body and yourself and moving, you don't have to push through that. That's a time for softness. That softness might be a hard workout. That softness might be 5 minutes breathing practice. That softness might be eye movement exercises so that you can do your hyperfixation for longer. You know what I mean? Work with yourself rather than against yourself. And movement and exercise are just so used against ourselves. And fitness spaces are so awful. I hate it. I'm not about it. I'm tired of it. I would like to see less of that.
When I was younger, by fifth grade, I was in a back brace because I had fractured a disc in my back. When I went to the hospital and later the doctor, they were like, did you fall out of a tree? Which could have been possible because my ass was like My ass was a mess. I couldn't skateboard. I couldn't do anything without hurting myself, like either getting sprained or getting a broken bone or something. But like
really, really common in a neurodivergent experience. It's a proprioceptive issue in the brain. There's tons behind it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was accident prone. That was the best language I had at that time. And but what happened was that MJ, without realizing it, my grandma had to call me out on this. And I say that in like a loving way. She had to like point it out to me, but she was just, from very early on, she was like, why do you keep hiding your chest? And I didn't have an answer for her. And this was back again in elementary school. But what I realized when I started paying attention to my body more was that I would pull the bottom of my shirt out a bit to try to like tug it away from me so it wasn't hugging me where I didn't want it to hug me. I was wearing baggier clothing to try to like hide my chest. And I was also hunching over, you know, almost like as if I was about to go into fetal position or something. I was walking around like that forever. And I honestly think that's how I fucked up the disc in my back, because I did not have any sort of injury where I was anywhere near falling out of a tree or anything like that. And I feel like it was over time fucking my back up from having such horrible posture from trying to hide my chest. And like, it was intense, like the lengths I went through to do that for the years, especially before we had binders or before I could even get access to those, or again, even make the connection that I was hiding my chest.
I really try and bring levity to my sessions. I feel like if you can laugh whilst you're working out, that's one of the ultimate expressions of fuck you to the fitness industry, because again, so much of it is so serious and you got to take this seriously and you got to like put your head down and be having a bad time. And I'm like, I love to make my clients belly laugh. Laughing with my clients is one of my greatest joys. And they know that like, that is an aspect of working with me. Is this, again, this kind of like, hey, we're going to be like soft, goofy, funny, and you're still going to like get what you need out of this kind of thing. It doesn't have to be serious. Of course, taking things seriously that are serious, not complete unawareness there. But
of course.
So the joke I make is queer posture. There is a like spinal position that I'm like, you've got queer posture. You have been making yourself small for so much of your life. Your body's like, yeah, this is what we do now. This is the position we're in. And the amount of like really messed up backs, spines, breathing restriction. When you think about how much you hunch forward, you're literally reducing your capacity for air. And if you can't breathe well, your brain is going to constantly consider it threatening, put you more in the fight or flight that you're probably already in because of how traumatizing, again, shouldn't be, but currently is traumatizing a neurodivergent and queer upbringing can be.
Yeah.
And it's just all these things just pack on to like, we're just doing such damage to our bodies and ourselves and our brains. And I think a big part of that is the lack of information on what you can do to take care of yourself during those times. I had a very negative approach to binders for a while because I was told by a trans man trainer. So he was my trainer. Mm-hmm. And as I was getting into being a movement professional, he told me people should never work out with a binder, that it's one of the most dangerous things to do to yourself. And I was like, oh, he knows. Because at the time, I'm not gender expansive. I'm a cis lesbian just trying to like do better for folks. But I hear this piece of information. I'm like, this is the law. This is it. And unfortunately, I put a client through. I was like, hey, I don't want you to wear a binder when we do our sessions. Like we can look at really tight, compressive things that just are not binders. And I regret that beyond compare. Like I think that's one of the worst decisions I've ever made in my work life, and I hate that I did that. And he still is a very different not was, as in I wouldn't blame him for not being friends with me after that. Like fucking legit, he would have every right to be like, that's not an okay thing to put on me. But I thought I was in the right from coming from a safety perspective. Fucking fuck that. Again, that's a very binary view of things. That's absolutely safe things you can do whilst wearing a binder. Is it safer not to? Sure. But for the person's mental well-being and mental state, I don't think any physical safety is worth that jeopardy and that discomfort. And there's absolutely ways you can work around it. So again, these kind of like hard and fast experiences, they can be soft and slow. And just, I wish more people knew how to advocate for themselves in movement spaces. I wish more people got more opportunity to learn about how bodies and brains can work, especially from a neurodivergent perspective, and ways you can treat yourself that don't put you at a different type of risk.
Yeah. And I know that something like top surgery is extreme.
Yeah.
And I know that there's a lot of people who are against it. And you know what, for me, it was so much better. Like, I didn't realize, it's just like over time, it can be hard to see what's happening to you when you're living it every day and it's only incrementally like getting worse or something. So like, it takes a while to catch up and be like, wait, why does this hurt so much? Like, binding was worse for me. Like, I wore the correct size binder, but you know, they had all these rules. You could only wear it 8 hours a day and stuff. Like, what the hell am I supposed to do? Who has an 8 hour day? Capitalism, fucking capitalism. Right? Like, who has an 8 hour day? I was a full-time grad student. I was working, and you know, like, it wasn't until I had top surgery, I realized how much I was putting my body through. I had to learn how to breathe again when you were talking about like lung capacity and shit. Like, yeah. I had to like physically remind myself and push past the normal limit I had. And I stopped having a lot of indigestion issues. Number one, just because I was happier with like my chest being flatter and stuff, like that alone, like reduced a lot of stress, like a great amount. But also because it was also pushing on my stomach and shit. I couldn't have like, you know, as much food as I would like and have like filling foods because the fucking binder. And like, I had the one that was longer that would also like dig into my sides and stuff too. So like, yeah, like, oh my gosh, it was weird actually. Like, thinking back to like sensory experiences, and now I understand what was happening. But like, the first time I wore a shirt without a binder, I was so uncomfortable. I wasn't used to it rubbing against my skin.
Your skin, right? Yeah. It's so challenging, isn't it? I remember the first time I got a binder, I got this like beautiful purple one from the bigger binder companies. It was like, okay, this is weird, but then put the shirt on over top and was like, okay, so I'll be wearing this all the time then. And literally from the first day I tried, I'm a very, when I'm in person. So I realized I was non-binary on my 26th birthday in a therapy session, because queer people go to therapy on their birthdays. And once I had that realization, I took a moment to process it. I was really anxious about telling my wife, because again, we were a lesbian couple married, and I was about to be like, JK, sorry, no, you're not. And like, I was really nervous about that. She was phenomenal. She always has been. But once I was like, oh, okay. Then I asked like small group of people, please use they, them, bigger group of people, family. I didn't like, okay, maybe I'll wear the binder once a week. I was like, I wear a binder every day now. I am non-binary. Like, once I kind of get there, then I'm there. And it's just, you told the disclaimer, it's like you said, don't wear it for more than 8 hours. But again, be realistic about people's lives and experience. Yes, from a safety perspective, tell people you really shouldn't wear it for more than 8 hours. But if you're in a situation where you have to, here are some things you can do to help reduce aggravation, to improve mobility, to reduce pain. You know what I mean? Like, provide more. Be considerate of situations people are going to end up in, be it situational or their own choice. And harm reduction.
Yeah.
All this to say harm reduction, I guess.
I wasn't about to like go home, take off my binder, let myself breathe for a while, and then put it back on and then go out again. That just wasn't realistic. It's the equivalent of like folks who may wear bras. Once you take that off for the day, I'm sorry. All other plans are canceled. I'm not going back out. I'm not getting back into that thing.
Absolutely not. Never.
Uh-uh. No. That's day over. Sorry.
Done. No, absolutely. Just like, that shit is so hard to like put on, take off. It's like wrestling. You'd be sweating by the time you get your shirt on, and then you're like, oh, you can't take a full breath in because it's so tight, and then you just go.
The first time I got a binder, it was a hand-me-down from a genderqueer mentor I was very lucky to have when I was in my early 20s. And when I tell you, I was in my bathroom alone trying to put it over my head. I was flinging for my life. MJ, I got stuck in the binder. I got so stuck in the binder to the point where I started to go in crisis mode. And I was about to have to like call my dad or grandma to be like, get me out of this fucking thing. I was so exhausted after that. I finally got out of it. I just realized, okay, we step into binders. We don't, we will never again try to put it over our head. It is not like a tank top or something, or like a training bra or a sports bra or any of that. Like, we need to step into it. And then it was fine. But oh my God, the flailing. I'm so glad that was like one of those moments that like no one else saw. Like, it was just awful.
And people get hurt in those situations. I've worked with people who have like, I've messed up my shoulder from wearing a binder.
Yeah.
If we're not even talking about like the rib cage compression, that spinal movement reduction, those are the kind of main areas of binder issues. But you can like hurt yourself, injure yourself putting them on. And again, there should just be more options, more information. It is not an accessible thing. But did binding save my life? Yeah, for sure, for me.
What's one allyship tip you'd like everyone listening to consider?
Don't use moralistic language when you're talking about food and your body. There is no good and bad food. It's food. You might be applying that to yourself, but if you say that about yourself, like, oh, I'm being so bad, I'm having cake, everyone around you now knows that you associate eating cake as a negative, and it's such an avoidable thing. I know there's a lot to undo with what has been shoved down our throats from capitalism. Around food and our bodies and whatnot. But the more you can reduce using that moralistic language, it's softer and kinder to yourself and to those around you who it might be really triggering to hear, and then emotional labor for them to correct and educate you. So just don't do it.
MJ, thank you so much for being on the podcast. You're a delightful human being, and I always appreciate our conversations and friendship overall. So yeah, I wrote a PSA in the form of song. Yes, that happened. I'm embracing my unhinged era, which really just means I'm unmasking. And I have to say, it feels really good. Because, you know, for so long, I didn't know that I was ADHD and autistic, and there's just so many people who appreciate this about me and that I don't have to hide it from. So it really means a lot, especially those closest to me in my life. And y'all know who you are. I love you so much. All right. There are 2 days left for the Indiegogo campaign for Allyship as a Verb. If you get anything from listening in, I hope you'll consider donating. You could donate $15 to help celebrate my 15-year testosterone anniversary that was back on August 12th, or any amount meaningful to you. At the time of recording this, I only need 51 more people to donate $15 each to hit the $3,000 goal that I'm so close to closing that gap on. So again, this helps fund almost all of the costs to produce this season alone. Anything over that will help cover the costs of Allyship as a Verb going on tour. It's happening here in Denver, Colorado, and the greater Colorado area starting this September 29th for a year as a pilot. And if all goes well, it could be going to Los Angeles next. To those who have been donating already, I can't thank you enough. Truly, it means the world to me and helps me out so, so, so much. And so everything that's been given so far, I'm so incredibly grateful because I want to continue to produce a podcast that I'm proud of and that is good quality and make sure that I'm able to get the people I need to help me to make it so good. So thank you, thank you, thank you. All right. Final three self-reflection questions. Number 4, what does softness mean to me? How does it differ from hardness? Number 5, what are some ways I can be soft with myself? Number 6, do I have queer posture? Visit allyshipisaverb.com for any resources and a full transcript of the episode. And remember, sometimes allyship means not moralizing food and food choices.